Hello there. That introduction to this week's podcast will become relevant once I introduce this week's guest and you kind of see what I'm talking about. Thank you very much for joining me for another episode of Soundtrackin' with me, Edith Bowman, where I dive into the minds of the great and good from the world of music, film and TV to talk about the beautiful and unique relationship between music and the moving image. And we are thrilled to welcome back a lady who was previously on the podcast with her director, but Natalie Holt is back on Soundtrackin'. She's the wonderful composer of things like Loki, but most recently providing the score for Obi-Wan Kenobi on Disney Plus, which me and my boys absolutely loved. Hello there. You see, that's what I was trying to do. Amongst the many lovely things which happened during the scoring process for Natalie were meeting none other than the legend that is John Williams and friend of the show, Ludwig Göransson, of which more shortly. First, a word from our very good friends at Shopify. Now, I've said this before, one of the many things about Soundtrackin' that we're very proud of is that we started it on our own, which gives us incredible freedom. We're able to make all the decisions. There's something empowering about being your own boss. Well, this is something you can do too with Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run and grow your business. Now, don't worry about not having skills in things like coding or design or even marketing. It's all in one place and makes it simple for anyone to sell anywhere. Whether you're thinking about creating your first online shop or you're looking to find new customers for your existing business. When you're ready to share your idea with the world, build it on Shopify, which is powering thousands of ideas across the UK. Shopify simplifies selling to anyone, anywhere, from in-person point of sale to online through your website and social media channels like TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. In fact, we are thinking about how we can use Shopify for soundtracking, whether that's for selling vinyl soundtracks or maybe getting some soundtracking merch. Watch this space. But now could be your time. Start selling today with Shopify for free. There's support 24/7 helping every step of the way. So, what's stopping you? Sign up for a free 14-day trial at shopify.co.uk/sound. That's shopify.co.uk/sound right now to grow your business today. And so to Natalie and her fabulous score for Obi-Wan Kenobi. And we'll begin with a cue from the series Spiced In. Thank you so much for your time, love. It's so great to get you back on. It feels like a kind of blink of an eye since we last spoke with Kate, but I mean, oh my God, what an exciting time for you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And we've had an absolute joy of every Wednesday night being excited about the dropping of another episode of Obi. It's so nice to have an appointment to view. It's really healthy for kids, I think, to have to wait for stuff. Where on earth did you start with Obi-Wan? It's so great. I've been listening on repeat to, there's a cue called, I think it's Order 66, is it? I just love the kind of journey of that cue in itself because it starts off so kind of tender and beautiful. And then it just takes, it's like almost like kind of taken off on a spaceship in a way. But where did you start with Obi-Wan? Talk to me a little bit about this journey working with Deborah and that whole world, really.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's quite...
How long ago were you already doing it when we last spoke then? Did you know it was happening?
No, I did not know it was happening. Wow. I sent in a reel for it like last summer. So I knew that the project was in existence, but it was slightly before Loki came out actually. And I think Loki put me in front, like it sort of gave me the attention I needed to kind of be in front of those people for that job, I suppose. And then the job kind of came back around Christmas time, because I think there was somebody else on board and the scheduling changed. And they actually wanted to release it on May the 4th, but it didn't quite come together. It was like, because, and they took a few months off the post-production schedule because they just changed the release date. So it was like a real, like, full-on frantic kind of job in time. So I landed the job on middle of December, and then I delivered the whole lot thing by like beginning of April.
Wow.
So it was kind of 3 months, plus Christmas. And then, my gosh, my dad was in hospital over Christmas. So my week off was more stressful than work.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Obviously, because there's a foundation there of the world, I guess, is kind of the best way of kind of describing it, in terms of there are bits there, you know, there are characters that we know, there are themes around characters that we've had in previous films and incarnations and all that kind of thing. So what was the kind of conversations that you had about how much of that you needed to incorporate or avoid, or what was it and stuff? Because obviously John's been involved in writing this new theme, and I got so emotional watching pictures of you meet him and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of like, oh my god, what was that like? So many questions, sorry, but yes, talk to me about the kind of parameters of, you know, of what they asked and how you did that and navigated, you know. It's not a complete blank canvas, is it, really? Or was it?
Well, it was. So when I met Deborah, like, she flew over, Deborah Chow, the director, flew over to London for 2 days, and she just wanted to watch it through and chat about it. And at that point, there was no, John Williams wasn't involved.
Yeah.
And also, like, they own the rights to his music, but he has to give permission for his themes to be used. And he hadn't given permission at that point. So Deborah sort of said, I don't want to use the heritage themes in case we can't use them. So let's treat this more like Mandalorian, and let's just take it into our own world, like, into more modern, and just make it our own and kind of ignore, just don't even think about the Star Wars legacy.
Yeah.
That was kind of the initial brief, which I tried to do. Although, I mean, I still my first sketches, like I did a sketch for Obi and Leia, and it was still very steeped in Star Wars. I couldn't kind of shake that off. Yeah, I think Deborah just wanted to just try something else, like something, she wanted it to feel more like internal and be more connected to Obi feeling like alone in the desert and like alienated from all the familiarity, and just that he's kind of living this really kind of simple, small life that then kind of, you know, expands outwards. So that was kind of her brief, was just really simple, keep it really simple and quite spare. So yeah, we did this and we were kind of working, and then end of January, I think Kathleen Kennedy and John Williams had got together, and he just said he kind of expressed interest in writing Benny a theme. Benny, like he calls Obi-Wan Kenobi Benny. But because he said, you know, he's the only heritage character that he hadn't written a theme for, because he didn't realise the importance of the character when he scored A New Hope. So yeah, he was just really... Then he said he had a couple of weeks and he didn't want to tread on my toes. He was so sweet and kind of, you know, then him coming on board and writing the theme and then allowing us to use his themes. He watched it through and he granted permission. He identified the places where he felt his themes should go. And so then it was those areas got taken care of by Bill Ross and John Williams separately from me. So it was quite a strange writing process, because I wasn't sure what they were doing, and Deborah wasn't either, because that's just how John Williams works as well. He doesn't have a computer, he doesn't do demos, he handwrites on a sort of architect table, like handwrites. And I received the piano sketch reduction for the Obi theme, you know, I think like the beginning of February, and I just played it through on the piano and I loved it. It sounds really lovely on the piano, actually. I was kind of hoping they might do a piano version. It's, you know, like that piano version of the E.T. theme that they have on the credits of E.T. It had that really kind of intimate, emotional quality. Yeah, and then I watched him record it, and it was his 90th birthday, and he recorded that theme, so that was very cool. I'm like a lifelong John Williams fan, and he's, you know, the reason I'm doing what I'm doing, I would say.
Oh, man.
So yeah, that was like a really special moment to be working on a show with him and watching him conduct. And yeah, just it couldn't have been better, really. It was great. And yeah,
how beautiful is that, to know that you've, like, he's the reason you do what you do, but then to work on this project where your music is kind of, there's a marriage of the two of you with your music, which is just, that's beautiful, because you have given this show its own identity through the music. And there are moments where we get little kind of sort of flutters of themes or whatever they are, sort of thing, but they're only kind of like tastes of things that are completely enveloped by your kind of your vision, really. But what an amazing thing to be able to do and to be part of. And the fact that, you know, he didn't have to kind of want to give, you know, the rights for his stuff to be used as and when it needed to be or whatever or wanted to be, but also to kind of, he obviously sort of saw something in what you were doing as well that wanted to be part of it. That must make you feel lovely and amazing. I hope it does.
It really does. Yeah, it's great. And, you know, because like Rogue One, he didn't give permission for any of his themes in that. So Michael Giacchino scored that very much like away. And that and it's a separate area of the world, of the universe as well.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's most similar to Han Solo, I guess. Like, and I got to meet John Powell as well when I was in LA. And it was so great to chat to him about... Yeah, what it was like, because I mean, there is, you feel like, oh my gosh, there's a huge weight of responsibility, because you know, like, you're working on something with such a kind of house style, I guess, for want of a better word, and so beloved, like the music, the Star Wars music is so beloved by the fans, so you just feel like this enormous sense of pressure to not not screw it up.
I've done it. You've done the opposite. It must be so hard, like, if you're watching it, and particularly with, not so much with Obi-Wan actually, or with Benny, as I'm now going to refer to him, but with Darth, because visually, you know, he comes on screen, and I remember how I felt when he came on screen as a kid watching him, and that music always accompanying him. Do you know what I mean? Dun dun dun. You know, it's there. It's kind of, you almost, you hear it in your head without even seen it. So as for you to have to kind of, particularly with being a fan, to remove that kind of from your brain when you're trying to sit down and write new themes around these characters that are real origins to where we ended up with that music, really, it's almost the journey to those points of those music, I guess. You're creating the origin story for those massive themes, really, in a way.
Yes, yeah, that, I mean, and actually my Vader theme, I mean, Deborah just said, like, when we're seeing him walking down the street in episode 3,
yeah,
and he's just killing people left, right and center, and she said, you know, we've never seen Vader in his prime, like, he's a young Vader, he's,
yeah,
angry, and he's full of rage and hatred, he hasn't kind of controlled his anger yet, like, when we see him in A New Hope, he's an older man, he's kind of controlled that, he's kind of reined it in, and he's just much more kind of military, and does it like that. And so she wanted this chaotic kind of swirling rage, like this visceral thing to accompany him, that it's just like coming from the depths. And, you know, so that was kind of how we approached that. But underneath, like, I used a hunting horn and like slowed down double basses, just... But yeah, underneath it, pinning it together, is this rhythmic drive on the drums, and there's like a war sticks as well. And that's got the Vader rhythm. So it's got the same rhythm as the Vader theme. So it is connected.
Yeah. I love the Sense Invader cue as well. That's got so much drama to it. Yeah. So it starts off with kind of almost quite electronic in a way. It's so great.
That's because Obi's kind of in the hiding place. Yeah, he kind of senses him, and then it develops into that street walk sequence. So, yeah. I mean, lots of things on the album are just telling stories visually. You know, like you were saying about the Order 66 track that you liked and how it shifts around. But that's, it's kind of going with the younglings doing their Jedi training, like really calm at the opening. And then suddenly the door opens and the stormtroopers start killing them. So, all those pieces on the album, it always feels weird to kind of, they're so specifically to picture. And then when you listen to them away, it's kind of how it works.
Did you have fun doing it?
Yes, I did have fun, but it was really like crazy stressful as well.
Yeah, I bet. More so than Loki?
Because Loki was in pandemic time and I recorded it all remotely. So I was like sat here recording the whole thing, like the orchestra, all the soloists were sending stuff back in and I just was tinkering around much more in my studio. And Obi, I did everything over in LA. But it was great to be with John Williams's musicians recording with that orchestra at the Fox Newman recording stage. So that was one of the highlights was getting to do it all live.
What does it feel like in that room? You know, you've done all that work, you've done all the prep, you've done all the sort of, and then you're in that room and you hear these musicians playing back what you've created. What's the feeling? What's the kind of emotion that you're feeling when that's happening?
Yeah, I don't know. I go into like a really weird zone when I'm in recording sessions. It's because I'm trying to get the best possible version of a cue. It's kind of like I'm just constantly like checking the score and thinking like maybe I should put, I don't know, like a mute on the second violin or whatever I'm doing. I'm kind of
still working.
Yeah, it's like I'm listening to it and then I'm working how to improve it and then you're kind of like, Am I getting goosebumps from this? Like, is it working to picture? And it's just kind of like I always feel that a day never goes as quick as one when you're in a recording studio. Like, how is it? It's like 10 o'clock at night, and like the whole the day just goes in a flash. I love it. It's great. Thank you.
We've been lucky enough that we've chatted to Ludwig a couple of times for the podcast, and he's, I love chatting to him. He's so fascinating as well. And you, am I right in thinking you worked a bit with Chris Fogel as well, who had worked with Ludwig on The Mandalorian?
Yeah. So Chris Fogel was my scoring engineer. Like, he was recording everything in the studio at Fox, and then we were mixing it together in Chris's studio. And Chris Fogel and Teddy Shapiro and Ludwig share a studio complex in Glendale. So that was really cool. Ludwig was away recording for Black Panther. He was on a kind of field trip, but he got back like halfway through and got to meet him and hang out a little bit.
He's so cool. He did this. We chatted in the middle of lockdown, actually, I think it was. And I was just kind of waxing lyrical about how my 9-year-old who's learning to play French horn was trying to play and he went, go and get him. So I went and got him, and when we came back, he had the giant recorder out and played it for him. It was like, oh my God, I like absolutely dined out on that for weeks after for my mum points. It was just like, it's wonderful to think, isn't it, that you as kids, we've kind of grown up watching something that's still part of, that's still inspiring and is still, you know, being creative, and the kind of the extension of the Star Wars world through all these wonderful projects, and Marvel as well. I just watched Thor Love and Thunder. I mean, he's a bit of a maverick and an original and brilliant kind of storyteller, I think, Taika. But in terms of, you know, for you, you've made such an impression in both these worlds, both in Marvel and both in this kind of Star Wars world. And like you said, it's like from the Loki thing definitely kind of, you know, made people pay more attention to the cues that you'd, the sweets that you'd put in for being part of the Obi-Wan thing. What's next? Do you have like a wish list of things that you want to do or people you want to work with, or how's it work now? Because you're in such a great position, particularly after these last two big projects as well that have quite rightly so gotten you so much great attention.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's really... I had a few weeks off, and I've just been reading Judd Apatow's book called Sick in the Head, which is, it's about, I find writing comedy really fascinating, like how people come up with things that make people laugh. I guess it's similar to writing music in a way. You're trying to come up with, it's all like a form of expression and writing. But
yeah,
I just found it really fascinating, like reading through all these comedians' processes, like particularly how they plot. They Gary Shandling, he was saying, had a vision for how he wanted his career to go, like in Seinfeld. They just had like a plan for themselves, and I feel like I've never really done that. I've just kind of, I'm like, I really like composing, and you know, it'd be great if I could make a living out of it, but I've not really been very focused on having a kind of plan of action. But I think maybe I should be a bit more so, because gosh, in 10 years it's like there's only a certain number of projects you can score, and I guess you want to make sure that you're kind of creating a good legacy of work that sort of stands together. I guess that's what we can hope for.
And I guess from the the series of, you know, Obi-Wan and Loki as an example, but you've worked on long form series prior to that as well. And that's a big ask in terms of a composer, in terms of the amount of music that you need to kind of provide for that. Is it different from writing for film? Is there much difference, or is it just a case of there's more of it?
I don't know. I'm still kind of working out what it is, because like Loki felt like a film to me because I was working on all of it. Like I was working on episode 6 and 1 at the same time and trying to make sure that there was an overall arc. And sometimes in TV when there's just more of a rush, you just have to go through episode by episode, and and you don't always have so much time to have that bigger picture, I guess. Yeah, Loki, I just had so much time because of the lockdown.
Yeah.
I had like a whole year on that, and I had 3 months of development coming up with themes and the suite and everything. I guess every job is different with basically time dependency.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What can you tell us about Batgirl?
What can I tell you about Batgirl?
It's like one of those weird things, you're gonna self-combust if you say too much. It's like
I went on set. My daughter, I can tell you this, my daughter was in a scene.
Oh.
We went to Glasgow where they're shooting at Christmas time, and she was in a scene with the young Batgirl.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that was really fun. And I was just really chuffed that, you know, my daughter just, she's like, mummy's going away for a month or something. Like, it was quite nice. It's nice to show your children what you do. And like, I took her into the, when she came over to LA, she came into the recording studio and saw that as well. So I feel like it's good to give them an idea of what you're up to when you're not at home.
Definitely. Yeah. I also think it's really healthy for them to have an understanding of what goes into making all this stuff that we watch and we digest as well. I remember taking my boys to watch, we managed New Hope and Empire Strikes Back with a live orchestra at the Royal Albert Hall. And cool. I remember my little one, who must have been about six at the time. I've let them watch Star Wars way too early than they should have been. But I remember him turning around to me and going, "Mum, there's so much music in this. I hadn't realised how much music there is." And, you know, I guess that's a good thing in terms of it's part of the journey. You know, you're not, it's not kind of making you stop and go, "Oh, that sounds," you know, it's all part of the experience. But it was so healthy for them to kind of go, these amazing musicians, they don't stop throughout this entire film, pretty much. It is like back to back. And that's probably part of why I love it so much. And it was really, really fascinating, really good conversations off the back of that from both of them, just about the number of players and what was involved. And I was like, that's why we've got to have a break in the middle, so they can have a break and have a rest before we come back in for the second half.
Oh my God. I took my daughter to a concert recently. It was LSO, the LSO doing, it was like a Jubilee celebration.
Yeah.
And I did feel kind of like, I'm not sure if this is the most child friendly. So we just did one half of the concert and she was so tired because it's quite late in the evening for them as well.
Yes.
And it wasn't like, yeah, John Williams sounds like more child friendly material for them to be listening to, like Vivaldi and sort of, yeah. I mean, she enjoyed it, but
yeah.
It's great to give them all these experiences, I guess.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Definitely.
But like with being on set and we were watching Harry Potter and she was watching and she was saying, "God, they've got a lot of lines to remember, haven't they?" And I was just thinking, that's interesting that she's now like thinking about how the whole film is put together,
yeah.
Not just the music, like the whole thing.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's really healthy. Natalie, thank you so much for taking the time. Really, really appreciate it. And huge congratulations. I've been loving listening to the music, or, you know, just as music from Obi-Wan. It really is a, like you say, there's such great storytelling in your wonderful score. So yeah, thanks for your time. And I really look forward to seeing what's next. Maybe we can have another chat around Batgirl as well when it comes out.
Oh, brilliant. Yes, thank you for asking me. Yeah.
All right. Take care and thank you so much, love. Have a good weekend.
Okay. Bye.
From the score to Obi-Wan Kenobi, that's Stormtrooper Patrol rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with the fabulously talented Natalie Holt. My huge thanks to Natalie for taking the time to talk to us. You can watch all episodes of Obi-Wan on Disney Plus right now, and me and my boys would highly recommend that you do it too. If you want to hear my previous chat with Natalie, along with Kate Herron, about Loki, head to edithbowman.com, where you can also subscribe and send us an email. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtrackin' UK. And please do share our posts on your social media. Next up, this one deserves a drum roll. Taika Waititi joins me to discuss Thor, Love and Thunder. Also, there's a very special Muppets moment. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, truckie.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other truckie.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.